Welcome to Small Bites with Glenn Gross and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Spaghetti, you can eat with a spoon.
Oh,
SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
He likes it.
No soup for you. No soup for you. No soup for you.
Feed me more.
Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs. Hey, my name's Glenn Gross. I own Fat Jack's Barbecue in Philly, New York, and you're listening to Small Bites on Wildfire Radio. It's like 6:35, 6:36. Do you know where your kids are? Not that it really matters. I know where my kid is. He's sitting right across from me, and guess what? His name is...
I sure hope that's a lie. I'm going to go get a DNA test immediately.
Your mom really likes barbecue.
Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com, and we have a packed studio. The gentleman that I just had the amazing fun time of spending an hour with, the Dining on a Dime crew, Kevin Wilson and John Cole, were kind enough to join us.
No. You had to beg them to join us. They weren't kind enough.
Well, actually, the gun sort of...
Thanks for having us, guys.
Thank you so much.
And James Pappas, the Philadelphia Cheesesteak Adventure blog, cheesesteak expert, also decided to stick around. I must have had glue on their seats. They couldn't.
Or they had nowhere to go.
Exactly.
That's a far walk to the parking lot from the new Wildfire complex.
But do you know what the real reason why they stuck around in studio, Glenn?
No, tell me why.
Well, they wanted to hear from the one and only John Howard Fusco, the nightlife correspondent for the Courier Post and New Jersey Monthly. Wow, look at that. You got one clap, John.
Wow, a smattering of applause.
It's applause of sorts.
That's very applausible.
Exactly. All right, guys, let's talk about what's going on the past week. We have Sergeant York. This is a new bar in Fishtown. It definitely has doing a old neighborhood vibe going. It just opened this past week. And you can check out the food and drink menu on Philly Mag. And there's even a drink already named after Gritty. So that seems to be the trend now. Everybody has to have something named after Gritty. So Sergeant York is following in those footsteps. Also opening this past week was South Philly Smokehouse at the Bach Building. This is a pretty swanky barbecue spot. Not only does it have regular seating, but also has a lounge area, which is kind of unique for a barbecue joint. And there's even a butcher counter to boot. So this is South Philly Smokehouse. Just opened this past week. And, of course, the big Boffo grand opening this past week, which everyone seemed to be going to, was Steve's Prince of Steaks, which had its opening on Chestnut Street in University City. This is the fifth location for Steve's, but this is a unique. It's the first one that is serving alcohol. So that is the Steve's Prince of Steaks in University City. Verdict's Coffee Bar just opened in the Comcast Center. And according to Eater Philly, a look for another venture from the Beard Warning Chef in the spring, called Vernick Fish. It'll be a fish-focused restaurant, also at the Comcast Center in the springtime. On the Jersey side of things, a new diner is rising on Route 73 in Marlton, and it will be called Olga's. And if you know that name, of course you should, because that was an iconic diner on the 70-73 Circle for many a year. So there is a new diner coming back with that name. It's a new different owners, so it's not the same owners. According to Philly.com, look for a spring opening for that location as well. So we'll talk about these articles and more from the past week in Philly food, including Wawa's secret Halloween menu, and a bar called Patchjunk Avenue, which is becoming a favorite in London, of all places. I'll be posting this all later tonight on my blog, and I'll be sharing it on Twitter, at Eating in S Jersey, and as always, hashtag Small Bites Radio.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John. We know you're going to be busy next week, getting all the candy ready for the kiddos for Halloween. So take next week off, and we'll talk to you again the first Sunday in November.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good evening.
Have a good one.
See you later. He's such a wealth of knowledge.
He is. I mean, the amount of information that he gives week after week, and talking about blogs, Kevin over here was asking me how I started my blog. John really was the originator of having a fantastic blog.
Your what?
He had the New York Times recognize his blog as one of the top 10 blogs in New Jersey.
And then what happened? It's like he hit the skids or something, and now he's in Forked River
and writing books.
What happened?
Well, he...
You know I love you, John. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, his blog was extremely successful. Then he actually took a little break from it, because it's a lot of work.
It's...
Absolutely.
People don't get that in almost anything when you're like, oh, I want to take a knee. They don't get it.
And it's a labor of love, is a blog.
Hey, did you guys... hear what happened at McDonald's in Hackettstown, New Jersey? Anybody?
No, let's hear about this.
Listen to this one. It was last Tuesday or Wednesday. I heard it on New Jersey 101.5. I guess the kid was a manager. We got a phone call at 6:30 in the morning. Hi, this is so-and-so from corporate. Okay, what can I do for you? I need you to empty out the safe, and I need you to get all the take all that cash. There was $1,200 in the safe. I need you to take all that cash and buy gift cards. And I need you to meet me, maybe it was a mile away, and give me those gift cards. The guy sent a cab to pick this kid up. Okay? The kid went to meet, quote-unquote, Chuck from corporate.
Wow.
And gave him the gift cards. And obviously, it wasn't anybody from corporate. And it's like, are you kidding me?
That's incredible.
I can't believe that happened.
That is unbelievable.
I can't wait to call Fat Jack's Barbecue and say, hi, this is Jay Cole from corporate. Glenn needs you to grab me 8 briskets, and I'm going to send an Uber for you.
I would do it, but not for the money, but for the food.
Yeah, no, I don't want any Glenn's money, but you know.
Oh, you guys are so full of it.
Oh. After this show, we can go to Fat Jack's. I have some gift cards.
I know, right? It's on me, everybody.
But Glenn,
but I don't have any. Go ahead.
Being a business owner, you have to think it's unbelievable people are that
stupid.
Stupid.
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, it's incredible.
Well, you know.
Doesn't he have a district manager that he has the number? Or in this day and age of texting, you don't. I think that was an inside job, Glenn.
Yeah,
inside job.
Okay, I'll admit it. I thought it was a great scam.
Yeah,
and I did it.
That kid was in cahoots. Come on.
And I thought that taking a taxi and sending it over to the kid was a great idea.
Yeah, but the kid's in cahoots. There's no doubt. If they investigate that case, it's going to lead back to that kid.
Because
nobody's that stupid. And in this day and age of texting, he had to have the district manager's number.
Well, I would think it doesn't sound to me like it would have been the general manager.
Right.
It sounds to me like it was one of the supervisors kids or whoever.
Yeah. I worked in retail many years.
And they should have, you know, what anybody, I think, would have done would be pick up the phone or text your general manager.
Right.
Hey, I got Chuck from Chuck who? Oh, I don't know. Did he give me his last name?
Yeah, that's an inside job. Most robberies are inside jobs, just so you guys know. Most of them.
Hey, I want you to look at JF and Cole right now. He's taking a selfie of himself.
J. Cole's doing a selfie. Check him out on Twitter.
Check him out on Twitter, J. Cole.
I just want to thank you, Glenn. You and Derek have been so nice to invite the Dining on the Dime crew.
Well, I'll tell you why.
They want us to clean up the room.
You got to clean up the room. Well, Derek.
And I will have your 100 for you by the time I leave.
Well, the only valuable part of the show was Jim. He was the only one who did any work.
And they even invited Jim Pappas, our cheesesteak expert.
And you know why?
Yeah.
Because, Derek and I always have a full studio.
Right.
Okay. We had nobody, so we grabbed you guys and say, come back here. You want to stay? Please, please.
You guys have 1,000 times more listeners than we do, so I'm so happy.
So that will be 1,000 listeners.
Yeah, right.
I was going to say, you're only saying they have 1,000 listeners.
No, I said 1,000 more. But I said 1,000 times more.
Listen, our millions and millions of listeners are taking all this in right now.
Right.
And they're listening to JF and Cole take his own selfie.
And do his selfie.
John, hold the selfie up and show everybody. Hold it up to the mic.
Let me see. Yeah.
There you go. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
But I want to thank you guys for inviting us, Dining on the Dime, wildfireradio.com. We're such a happy to be a part of this family, the Wildfire family, which includes Sunday nights. Yeah. We are on 5 to 6.
We're on 6:30 to 7:30, and Just Grubbin' is right behind us.
And
I think they start at 8.
No better knowledge of food and beverage in the entire country than we are.
Do you know that, and Derek brought this to my attention maybe 3 weeks ago, we are the number one food show in the tri-state.
Yeah, that's why I'm so happy to be here.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you need to leave the money on the table before you leave. Okay?
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you got going on besides, Kevin, what do you have going on besides Dining on a Dime?
Well, Dining on a Dime is meant for people that like to eat out well.
And don't have any money.
But have no money. And we tell you the specific places where you can go. The concept I created back in 2012 for my blog, because I had a woman give me a cursed-filled email because I was blogging about places she couldn't afford. Mm-hmm. So I created a Dining on a Dime section of my blog. I went into ESPN to promote my book, Table for One, at Barnes & Noble. Went to promote it. I was on a show, and Joe Massaglia has Joe's Table for Two. He said, why don't you call in every week and do a Dining on a Dime segment, teach people where at in the city to go for under, you know, $10. Our show is actually where to eat out well and save a lot of money.
So
we're not really at the $10.
So Dining on a Dime, what is your number one Dining on a Dime recommendation?
Wow. Did I give you these questions? That's the greatest question.
No, you did not.
Wow. Check this out. I'm so happy you asked that because I'm asked that a lot. But
okay, next. John.
No. Chris's Jazz Cafe at 15th and Samson is an upscale jazz club. Mm-hmm. You go in there. It looks like you're in a nice place. $8 lunch Monday through Friday.
Really?
Yes. And he doesn't stick with burgers and stuff. He does good stuff.
Oh, man. And talking about good stuff, we have Chef Ingrid Hoffman online with us. Yeah, I mean, how exciting. Hello there, Chef Ingrid. Now, we are so thrilled because, one, with the American health system out there and the way people are eating, it's really unhealthy. And you've teamed up with the American Diabetes Association for a book that I know that everyone's going to love, Latin Comfort Foods. But here's the catch, made healthy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and this wonderful book?
Thanks for having me, and hello to everyone.
Hello.
You know, this is really one of those trying to break that myth that Latin food isn't healthy. You know, these are all the comfort foods we've all gotten to know, you know, tacos and chimichangas and carnitas, food from all over Latin America and Caribbean and Spain, just made healthier. And it's a great example for people that fear going on diets. I mean, you have to have lettuce with lime and grilled chicken. This is actually, no, you know, we can eat all of the foods we love. It's just a question of modernizing, you know, exchanging for better for you ingredients, cooking techniques that actually allow you to get the textures as if you're frying, but not frying. So there's lots of tips and tricks throughout the book that help people eat healthier.
Yeah.
And that's the goal.
And make
it as easy as can be.
And traditionally, Latin foods usually are on the carb side, deep fried, heavy with salt. How difficult was it to flip that around and have traditional sort of Latin foods, but have them healthy, yet still delicious?
Well, you know, nowadays we have the use of so much newer ingredients that people can, you know, go to. And with what we know now about food in general is, you know, it's doable. It's a question of introducing fiber into your diet and cutting down on the bad for you ingredients. So that's how I went about doing it for most of it.
Hey, I have a quick question for you. I'm looking at the smoky shrimp tostadas and with the chipotle mango slaw. That looks absolutely amazing. It's appetizing. How can that be healthy?
Sorry, can you repeat which one that was?
Yeah, it was the smoky shrimp tostadas with chipotle mango slaw. It looks amazing.
Yes, well, amazing. What we did there is that we added the vegetable count, mm-hmm. reduced the size of the tortilla and to a corn tortilla, and we upped it, you know, through upping the vegetables and fiber. So what we also did was play with the ratios of food so that you're getting more protein and vegetables compared to the quantity of the carbohydrate.
Yeah.
Generally trying to stick, in this case, to the corn, to the 6-inch, which makes it doable, and you just have a lot more of the vegetables and the amount of protein.
It looks amazing. Is that corn tortilla fried or no?
No. I do a method in which I simulate where you start out with dehydrating the ingredient at low heat and then turn it up and toast it in the oven. So by dehydrating it first and then upping heat to toasting it, you sort of get a similar texture. And those are all the little shortcuts and cheats that I start applying throughout the entire book.
Yeah, and also...
This really is that...
Yeah, I mean,
once someone has done a few of these recipes, they understand, wow, you know, I don't really know the difference, and this actually works, and this is easy to do, and it tastes really good, that hopefully people start going through that type of tricks and tips. In a lot of the carb-heavy food, what I did was cut it down by half by including either cauliflower or zucchini, ingredients that tend to grab the flavor of all the other food. So even in a Spanish potato tortilla, half of it is done with the cauliflower. Now, we served it the other day at a party, and no one had any idea. And so that just goes to show you that you can still have these foods. It's a question of modernizing and think, you know, smart thing, doing the smart thing to them. Those little twists that no one can tell, but that immediately take down half of the carb is gone.
Well, you are certainly the expert in that. I mean, you are the host of Top Chef Astralis, Simply Delicioso on the Cooking Channel, and Delicioso on Univision. And what I also like, too, is that you try to educate your followers for better-for-you ingredients, implementing cooking habits, and think of food as medicine. You even have your own food brand, Cucina by Ingrid Hoffman, and now you have this wonderful, wonderful book, Latin Comfort Foods Made Healthy, that you've teamed with the American Diabetes Association. It was our pleasure talking to you, and keep us posted with any more of your endeavors.
Thank you very much, and invite all your followers if they like to follow me on Instagram, and I do all these tips and tricks and little mini shows every week. So I invite everyone that wants to join me, Ingrid Hoffman Official. And thanks, and wishing everybody a very happy evening.
Thank you. You do the same. It's a pleasure. Have a great night.
Bye.
That was fun, Glenn.
Yes, definitely.
And now from wonderful Latin food made healthy to what many people consider the most important meal of the day.
What would that be?
That would be breakfast. And we have Ryan Grimm of Extra Crispy online with us. And they just so happened to put a book out called Breakfast. What do you think about that? The most important book about the best meal of the day, they call it. Nothing to say on that one, Glenn?
Well, I'm just looking at the bacon. I mean, look at this. I was speechless.
He was just staring at bacon porn. Yeah.
You do know that bacon is its own food group, right?
Bacon is certainly its own food group.
Yes, it is.
And Ryan, hello there. What a wonderful book. And I have to agree, at least in Philadelphia, breakfast is a treat because we have Scrapple here. That's just my opinion. And we also have Taylor ham or whatever you want. Pork roll, whatever you want to call it. Tell us a little bit about this new book, Breakfast.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, that's right. It's called Breakfast, the most important book about the best meal of the day. It's by the editors of Extra Crispy, which is a website that's all about breakfast. Yeah, you mentioned Scrapple. We got Scrapple in there. We have Taylor Ham in there. We have all sorts of breakfast recipes for people who are obsessed with breakfast or, you know, if you want to convince someone that really is the best meal of the day. It's a great book. It's all about breakfast.
Now, you also answer some of the more pressing questions that people probably always ask themselves but never have an answer to. Sort of like, why do we eat eggs for breakfast? I mean, who thought it was appealing to say, oh, let me just get that thing that just came out of the chicken and try it for breakfast?
Exactly. Brave, brave person. Yeah. You know, thank them billions of years later now, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of, there's definitely a lot of stuff in the book that goes way beyond recipes, you know. It's a lot of this breakfast enthusiasm. There's a lot of really good essays and, like, first-person stories and travel stories all about the wide world of breakfast, and we really kind of covered everything.
What's your favorite breakfast? I'm looking here at a picture of Texas red chili and eggs. Now, I would eat that every morning. What's your absolute all-time favorite?
In the book?
Yeah, and then not in the book.
Yeah, in the book, I might have to go with the Scotch eggs.
Scotch eggs
is a great recipe. Seems complicated, very simple, soft-boiled egg, and you wrap in sausage, flour, a little egg wash, and then panko and fry it, and it's just so good.
I've made those.
It's kind of got everything in there. It's got like a little carb, a little egg, a little protein, you know?
Now, I don't know if you cover this or not in the book, but a question or inquiring minds to me always want to know for breakfast, why is it so different in different cultures? Like the Western culture, America and a lot of Europe, we tend to stick with the eggs and your traditional, what we call traditional breakfast. Now, when you go to Africa or say Asia, it's a whole new ball game. When you wake up in your hotel or wherever you're staying, they say, oh, breakfast, and they bring it. Oh, I wasn't exactly thinking that, but I guess we'll eat it. What do you think is the difference?
I mean, well, that's why the meal's so great. Yeah, that's why it's so great, is that wherever you go, you know, there's so much difference around the world. You know, you could go to, you know, Japan and get something like natto, which is kind of like a gooey, like, soybean dish. You could get something like pho if you're in Vietnam. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, just a wide range of dishes that it's, you know, it's definitely the most kind of surprising and I think like delightful meal when you travel, without a doubt.
Now, also for those who sort of like to go and have fast food or a certain name brand sort of breakfast, sort of like the Taco Bell breakfast crunch wraps, you guys even got that covered in the book. I mean, well, this sounds like this was some heavy duty research to get this book out there.
Oh yeah, we worked on this. I mean, a lot of these, some of these are from the site, some of them are completely original. But this has been, you know, a project in the works for a little over 2 years, and there's a lot of breakfast research done, a lot of, you know, a lot of recipe testing. You know, test it again, make sure it's perfect. A lot of, you know, we really wanted to cover all of our bases. So you mentioned the crunch wrap. We got that in there. We got, you know, like how to make beet lox at home, which is kind of a more complicated recipe. We have Scotch eggs. I mentioned that. We have, you know, really kind of, you know, more difficult things like khachapuri, which is from the country of Georgia, which is kind of like a big bread boat with cheese and egg. And it's like amazing. And then we also have breakfast basics, just like poaching an egg or, you know, frying bacon or making a fried egg. So we kind of covered everything.
Did you eat your way through these recipes?
Most. I would be lying if I said I had 100% of them, but I had a lot.
Now, the one good thing that I personally like about breakfast, and we have the Dining on a Dime show crew in studio with us, John Cole and Kevin Wilson, is breakfast sort of fits into their motto that they talk about on their show, that breakfast you can get like dining on a dime. You can get breakfast cheaper than any meal of the day.
We've talked about this before. If you're going to eat out, breakfast is always your best value. You'll get the most food, the best quality ingredients for the lowest amount of money you're going to get. I think that you look at a breakfast cookbook like this, and some of the photography is beautiful in this, but this is also more accessible that someone can do at home. Let's be honest, when James Beard throws their cookbook out there, I don't know how many people are going to be tackling that. Something like this, accessible ingredients, eggs, bacon, you know, this all day long, I would rather see than something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great book. Now, where are you based or where are you originally from, Ryan?
So I'm based in New York. The Extra Crispy team is in Manhattan.
Okay.
Originally, I'm from Ohio.
Okay, so being in New York,
the delicacy is ghetto.
Yeah, so being in New York, you sort of know the Jersey lore now of Jersey diners.
Yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
That alone, Jersey alone has it that you can get breakfast practically any time of the day. Do you see that a lot in other places around the country? besides Waffle House, I guess.
Yeah, it's not as prevalent. I would say, you know, when you leave the East Coast, when you leave New York, New Jersey, Long Island, the 24/7 breakfast is, yeah, much more Waffle House or, you know, maybe like a truck stop breakfast. But there aren't as many diners that are open super late. That's definitely a regional, you know, thing. You know, and it's great.
Yeah. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about Extra Crispy, because you guys are extremely popular. Like the humor, it's sort of snarky at times. Get into what Extra Crispy is.
Yeah, so launched a little over 2 years ago. It's a food site that focuses on breakfast and brunch. We do some recipes, we do videos, we do interviews with people, we do kind of like travelogues and personal essays all about breakfast. We also have a show on you can watch on Facebook and YouTube called No Pressure. That's hosted by Kat Kinsman. That's like really funny, and it's like an Instant Pot show. She has a somewhat non-traditional relationship with her Instant Pot. I'll just leave it at that. Where you know she has guests on and makes really interesting recipes in the Instant Pot. Yeah, we also do news. We do we have a lot of kind of like a really wide range of contributors. Because I feel like almost every writer, they all have one breakfast story in them. You know, whether or not they're a food writer. You know, everyone's got a really interesting thing to say about breakfast, either growing up or breakfast on the road or whatever.
Now, we also have Jim Pappas in the studio of the Philadelphia Cheesesteak Adventure. What's your thought on a cheesesteak for breakfast? Because there are some food carts in Philadelphia that do serve cheesesteak for breakfast.
He's not sure.
He couldn't believe it.
Did he actually say cheesesteak?
And Ryan, I need your help because I'm up early.
If you can think of it, we'll do it here in Philadelphia. But Ryan, this is a wonderful book. As Glenn mentioned and John, the photography is top-notch. The ingredients and the way to work it through are step-by-step, easy to follow, and it's something that everyone needs in their kitchen. We really appreciate you calling in. Ryan Grimm of Extra Crispy with the book Breakfast, the most important book about the best meal of the day. And why don't you give us any social medias or anything like that before you go?
Yeah, that's right. It's at Extra Crispy on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Like I said, the show No Pressure is on Facebook. Check it out. And thanks for having me on.
No problem. It was our pleasure. Have a great night.
So, Derek, you travel.
Thank you, you too.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. So, Derek, you travel all over the country and the world.
Yes.
And I'm guessing you've had room service breakfast.
Yes.
All over. You know, we were in Atlantic City maybe a month ago.
Glenn starts talking about going all over the world. Then he says, I had breakfast recently in Atlantic City.
No. And I looked at, I thought about room service. And you know, I don't have the luxury of being able to travel all over the world. So I looked at the room service and three eggs and toast, $18. For $18, those eggs better get up and do a song and dance for me.
But that's okay. The song and dance for room service.
I understand that. But it's like, three eggs, it costs you 25 cents a piece.
And guess what? When you step outside Atlantic City, two doors down, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
But talking about an individual that knows something about wonderful donuts is Stephen Cook, because he's got his fingers in Federal Donuts, but he also had his fingers typing for a wonderful new book called Easy, Essential, Delicious Israeli Soul. How's it going there tonight, Stephen?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, Derek.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Now, I have to tell you that this book really blew me away. It reminded me of the last trip that I had over to Israel and seeing all the meals going from town to town to town. Top notch. You guys really hit it out of the park. What was your thoughts on creating this book and how did it come about?
Well, thank you, first of all. I'm glad to hear you say that because, I mean, the book is really, it's as much a travel guide as it is a collection of recipes. We spent about 8 days over in Israel shooting the book, and we visited 82 restaurants in those 8 days. So we did a lot of eating and a lot of talking to, you know, restaurateurs over there who had been, you know, in some cases, third or fourth generations doing one thing, you know, over and over and over again till they got it perfect. So we really wanted to sort of take this book to Israel and sort of show people what food culture is like over there.
Now, in Philadelphia, we are very familiar with the award-winning restaurant Zahav. And that's how we know, oh, Israeli food. Mm-hmm. You want the best of the best. You go to Zahav. I don't think that's the case in most of America or the way that Americans think. I think for the most part, you think of different foods. Israel doesn't come to mind of, oh, Chinese food, Thai food. You usually don't have a mindset of, hey, let's go out for Israeli food tonight. Why is that? And what can we do to change it besides going to purchase this wonderful book?
Well, I think things are a little bit better. People know a little bit more now than they did 10 years ago when we first opened Zahav. Everybody was asking us when we opened, you know, where's the falafel, where's the shawarma? And I think the biggest misconception about Israeli food is that it's the same thing as Middle Eastern food. And there's a ton of overlap, but the cool thing about Israel is that it's a 70-year-old country that was basically formed, you know, within the last couple of generations. And you had people from, there's 100 different cultures represented in Israel and in the food on the table. So it's Middle Eastern food that has been there for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years, but there's also food from North Africa and from Yemen and from the Balkans and Europe. So it really is, you know, it's not unlike America in that it's a true melting pot.
And the thing that really impressed me about Israel is for the size of Israel, give or take, it's a little bit larger than the state of New Jersey. And it really has a diverse food scene with very different food regions. You normally don't see that with a locale as small as that. Like America, you can say, oh, we've got northern food, we've got southern food, you have the barbecue belt. For as tiny as Israel is, it's really, really a great little spot to go here or there for specialized food. And another thing that really caught me was the amount of produce and homegrown ingredients that Israel is able to produce with their superior technology of aggregation and things like that. The first time you ever visited Israel, what were your thoughts? Were they the same as mine, or did you just know? I was surprised.
Well, I mean, it's amazing to see from a technology standpoint, what they've been able to do without agriculture. For a country that small, I mean, they have just a huge variation in terrain. You have mountains in the north that get snow. You have desert in the south. You have the sea. So there's a lot of different terrains. And, you know, Israel, for most of its history, has been an island from a trade perspective. So they really had to, anything that you get in Israel historically has been produced in Israel. So I think that's really pushed along sort of amazing strides they've made in agriculture. And it also, you know, helps make the food taste good because tomatoes in Israel or cucumbers in Israel, they don't ever see a refrigerated warehouse. You know, they're picked and they're on a table within a matter of a day or two because it's such a small country and everything is grown there.
Now, what was your favorite region to get inspiration from the book? And you can't go with the easy answer of all of them. Which part was it? Tel Aviv? Was it Jerusalem? Was it the Golan Heights? What area really drew you?
Well, I would say Jerusalem is changing the most in terms of it was never a city that was known for food. It had a lot of other things that it's known for, and that's, I think, changed the most since I started going to Israel. But I really still can't. You can't really beat Tel Aviv for the density and the number of things. You know, the street life in Tel Aviv, like, you think New York is a city that never sleeps, but Tel Aviv, it's just people are, you know, you go out any time of night and people are just pouring out of bars and restaurants and just enjoying food. And the street food scene there is just incredible. And you can spend, you know, there's a sandwich called sabich, which Israelis, which is not very well known outside of Israel, which is, they have great sabich in Tel Aviv. It's kind of the only place you can really get it. Was brought to Israel by Iraqi Jews in the 1950s and is sort of slowly becoming you know, taking its place alongside of falafel and shawarma as sort of like a national sandwich. And you know, Tel Aviv is just such an exciting, cosmopolitan place.
Yeah, I mean, Tel Aviv is wonderful, and I think when you have such a metropolitan area like that, sort of like Tel Aviv and Barcelona, when you've got good drink, good food, and a wonderful beachfront, that's a combination for winning in every direction.
What was the name of the sandwich again, and what's actually in the sandwich, and why is it so popular?
So, it's a great story. It's called Sabich, and it's an example for people who are wondering what Israeli cuisine is. It's an example of something that was actually created in Israel. So the ingredients are fried eggplant, hard-boiled eggs, and a condiment called amba, which is made from pickled mangoes. And it was brought by Iraqis. Iraqis they were traders in India and even into China, and that's where the pickled mango condiment came from. They brought those things here to Israel in the 50s, but it wasn't a sandwich until they got to Israel and they saw what Israelis did with everything, which is basically stuff it inside of a pita. And they said, we can do this too. So they stuffed it inside of a pita. They added the Israeli chopped salad and the tahina. And it's a vegetarian sandwich, but you don't really miss the meat. It's like super flavorful. And it's very hard to... people haven't heard of it outside of Israel, and it's not really even available that much outside of Tel Aviv, but it's starting to get more and more popular.
Yeah, and like another sandwich, and one of the things that surprised me of traveling around Israel as well, because we have the gentleman of Dining on a Dime show in with us, Kevin Wilson and John Cole, and also John Pappas of the Philadelphia Cheesesteak Adventure, is shawarma. Right. When I had shawarma, shawarma in the States isn't shawarma over in Israel. I'm going to tell you that right now. In a lot of places, you may see shawarma on the menu. It's not really shawarma. It's done wonderfully, and it's affordable and practically anywhere. I liked that culture of grab and go, affordable, delicious, tasty, while top grade ingredients. What created that sort of food culture atmosphere? Because it seems as though Israel took a hold of that concept of sustainable, local, farm to table much sooner than many other countries did.
Right. Well, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on cheesesteaks, especially since you have one right there. But I mean, I think like, if you think like what makes a great cheesesteak shop, a lot of it is like sort of it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. A busy place that's going through product, moving through product is always going to have a better, fresher sandwich. And I think the same thing goes for shawarma over there. And shawarma really... it can be really, really bad. It can be like really low quality meat, sort of like a processed loaf on a stick.
And that's usually what you find in the States.
Yeah.
What exactly is
in some places in Israel? Yeah.
What exactly is shawarma?
Go ahead. So shawarma is like it's not that different from like a doner kebab or like even tacos al pastor. It's lamb, even more often turkey, that's sort of threaded on a vertical skewer. Vertical spit. It's kind of layered with lamb fat and spiced, and it rotates on a spit, and they slice it off as it gets done into a pita or a laffa, which is an Iraqi style pita. And we met one guy in Tel Aviv at a place called Hakosem, and he builds his own shawarma, which is rare. A lot of people buy it already formed, but he forms his own, and he says, I only use female turkey legs because the male ones are too tough. So
I personally think females have the best legs as well.
Such a pot.
Right. So some people, the people that take it really seriously, you can get some like extraordinary shawarma.
Now, you are more famously known in Philadelphia as the portion of the Cook and Solo restaurant group. Now, you guys have many, many successful award-winning restaurants, but just like your children, sometimes you have to choose your favorite and who you think is the best pupil. You guys have Zahav, Federal Donuts, Abe Fisher, Dizengoff, The Rooster, and Goldie. Which one, if you had to only choose one, is your go-to?
thoughts?
Well, hopefully my partners aren't listening right now. hopefully they are. I don't know. I think Federal Donuts might be the one that takes my kids through college, but we'll have to see.
And that is a good choice, I would say, because that is sort of, in my opinion, what the ideal of Israeli Soul is. It's food for everyone. Some of the other locations, some people may say it's the greatest food that they've ever had. Some people may give or take because they're not familiar with it, not knowing the quality of ingredients and the service that you're putting out. But who doesn't love fried chicken and donuts?
Where did you come up with fried chicken and donuts?
Well, we knew donuts we had right away. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting around planning before we opened the first store. And we really, really were just hoping that we could generate enough business to stay open. We never thought for a second that there would be a second Federal Donuts. We sort of were like, it's even odds that we're going to go under in a year. So we're sitting there trying to, figure out like what, people aren't really going to want donuts in the afternoon. What can we sell that, that can sort of continue on in the day and generate some sales after lunch or, at lunchtime. And I don't know, someone just threw out the idea of fried chicken and nobody laughed, I guess, and that was it. And, we still get to say the most common question we still get is whether we fry the chicken and the donuts in the same oil. And the answer has always been no.
Yeah. You answered the $1 million question of what is a wonderful combination, and that is fried chicken and donuts. And it was a pleasure talking to you. Stephen Cook, the co-author of the new cookbook, Israeli Soul, Easy, Essential, Delicious. Have yourself a great night and feel free to share any social medias or websites before you go.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem.
Take care.
Have a great night.
You too.
Wow.
Wow.
From award-winning chicken and donuts
to
award-winning cookbooks. And we have online with us someone I'm very excited to talk to.
You've been talking to me about that all week, really.
Yeah, yeah. Dory Greenspan of her new book, Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. Dory, how's it going tonight?
I'm so happy to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, we are.
It's chugging along. That's how the night is going.
Well, it is a pleasure to talk to you. And I really like the title of the book, The Way I Cook, because you have millions and millions of fans, whether it's your cookbooks or your social medias, and you have a particular way that you present recipes, that you present dishes, and it is truly putting your flavor out there, and it is the way that you cook. But what makes a Dory recipe?
It's funny. I think it's only when you write a book and you look back and you say, oh, I get it. I've been doing this all my life, and now I finally can see it between covers and understand. I love a surprise in a recipe. My cooking is very simple. I'm very practical. But I like when somebody takes a bite and says, ooh, there's something in there I don't know. Or what makes this different? And so I'm always looking to, it's another way of delighting the people that you're cooking for.
And also,
I'm always looking for something.
Yeah. And also the thing that I really enjoy about your personality is that you encourage spontaneity. And the reason for that is the recipe offer choices or playing around features, information and tips for swaps, mixing and matching and substitutions. Because just when you think that you had everything in the cupboard to make that recipe that you're looking for, oh, darn. No, I ran out of what I thought I had.
And they've done that.
So that is brilliant on your part. And I think that's why your fans really gravitate towards you.
I'm sorry I didn't think through all my cookbooks. Everyday Dory is my 13th. I've done something called playing around, which is what you're talking about, ways to swap and to change and to substitute. Now, listening to you, I'm sorry I didn't call that little part of each recipe. Oh, darn.
For your next one. Because we know you'll be putting out another wonderful book. For the next one, we'll be looking for oh, darn in there.
Dedicated to Derek.
Well, but that's exactly it. You're in the kitchen, you're cooking, you're working down the recipe, and it's, yeah, oh, darn, I don't have something. And some of my best recipes, the ones that I really love, have come about just like you. It's been an oh, darn moment. Mm-hmm. And I've opened my fridge, and I've looked at the door and thought, oh, I could add a little mustard. Or how can I really pick up the flavors of this dish without going out to buy something new? And that's when I say I'm a practical cook. It's that kind of cooking. And I love when somebody takes my recipe and then makes it their own, tweaks it, fiddles with it, plays with it so that the flavors really match the flavors that they love.
Now, I mean, that is the perfect reason of why you were inducted into the James Beard Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. And you've won 5 James Beard Awards, 2 Cookbook of the Year Awards. It goes on and on. You take everything to a precise level. You know how to write exactly how the person needs to absorb the information, being a columnist for the New York Times Magazine. And then you put out little simple recipes like lemon goop. I mean, who?
Lemon goop.
It's such good. It's so delicious.
I hope. I want the world to make lemon goop. So lemon goop is, I live part-time in France. And we can go to any little market, any corner market, and buy preserved lemons there. So those are lemons that have been preserved in salt. And it takes weeks, sometimes months, to make a preserved lemon. And I'm an impatient girl. And those are not easy. That's not an easy ingredient to find at your corner grocer in America. And so I came up with this way of making preserved lemons really quickly, which is to cook the lemons in water, salt, and sugar. So they're a little sweet. And they're very salty. And then when they fall apart, I strain the liquid, which is like a syrup at that point, and it makes a great vinaigrette. It makes something terrific to just brush over poultry or over fish before you grill it. And then all the little pieces of the lemon that are left over, including the rind, I whiz around in a little blender. And that's the goop. And it's like a shiny, salty lemon marmalade. And, you know, if you put it on flip-flops, the flip-flops would taste good. It makes anything taste better. It's like a little magic condiment that you can make at home.
The Dory's Jim Pappas. And I tell you, I'm probably the least foodie person here. But from hearing, looking at the pictures of your book and hearing the way that you... oh darn. I could actually see a night of trying to make lemon goop and maybe even like leaving out trying to substitute on my own. So I like to thank you for that.
Oh darn.
Oh, darn. And I
whatever you say, I hope you'll say thank you. I loved this. During the process you may say anything you'd like.
and what I enjoy about the majority of all of the recipes is we also have in studio the crew from Dining on a Dime, Kevin Wilson and John Cole, is you're taking things with ingredients that are simple, affordable, turning them into extraordinary. So it's someone may look at this and be like, well, that dish is a little, it's probably $1 million. No, it's not. You're taking the simplest of things and making it really into a masterpiece.
Well, there's a dish in here with eggs and rice. I mean, that's,
soy sauce eggs.
Soy sauce eggs and sticky rice. That's fairly accessible to everybody, mm-hmm. right? Even, economically.
Even Derek.
let's not get carried away.
Well, I'm so glad that you noticed that because I cook from the supermarket. It's where I get the majority of my ingredients. And the recipes in the book are used simple ingredients that are easy to get. I am not a trained chef, so I'm not using fancy techniques. I'm just using good ingredients and trying to get the most flavor I can out of each ingredient and then adding that little bit of surprise. It's really doable.
Now, this is your 13th cookbook. Let me repeat that for people.
13th.
Wow. How difficult does it become when you're writing a new one? Is it still as enjoyable as day one when you wrote your first recipe as it is today?
That's such an interesting question. Yes, it still is as enjoyable, but it is difficult and in some ways more difficult because I have so many recipes behind me. So, you know, the easy ones are taken already. It's really, you know, those are gone. So it's really, it's you know, I love it. I love thinking about new combinations. I love thinking about new ways of presenting foods. I love thinking about taking some ingredient that someone might not think about using and putting it in a dish. So, do you know there's it's a bottled chili sauce. It's called gochujang. It's a Korean chili sauce. And a friend of mine brought me a jar of it from the supermarket and said, see what you can do with it. And I used a little bit of it. And like so many things, you know, you buy them, they're great. And then they sit on the refrigerator door and you don't use them again. And I made a beef stew that started out to be a kind of classic French beef stew, marinate the beef cubes in red wine, cook them the following day. And I opened the fridge and there was that gochujang and I put some in there. And all of a sudden that French stew took a turn toward Asia. And there was a little soy sauce. And so that's, you know, in book number 13, that's the kind of stuff I can play with. It doesn't lose its excitement. It gets more exciting because there's the opportunity to come up with new ideas and to share them and to get other people excited about the food.
Jordy, how about I'll go out and get your first book. I'll get most of the ingredients and I'll come over and then you have to recook everything missing a few ingredients, and we'll see what you come up with.
Dory reloaded.
Now in this book, Everyday Dory, now this is your 13th book, and as you said, it's becoming more difficult, but it's not becoming any less delicious. We have oven-charred tomato-stuffed peppers, Lower East Side brunch tart, clam chowder, my Frank Sinatra, there we go. Marinated and pan-seared hanger, flank or take your pick steak, salmon burgers, maple syrup and mustard Brussels sprouts, sweet and smoky roasted carrots for the barbecue man over there at Glenn.
I can share some recipes with you if you'd like. New ones.
Yeah. I mean, it goes on and on and on. What I always find interesting is someone who is as successful as you and has a brilliant mind for recipes. Who do you enjoy or who do you always make sure to buy when they release a new cookbook?
So you ask hard questions. Besides you had on right before me, right? I've already got my copy of their new book, yeah. Israeli Soul. I've been really interested in Yotam Ottolenghi's books, and he writes a lot about food. His palate, he cooks in London, but his palate comes also from Israel and from the Middle East, and so I'm interested in those spices. So I'll follow what he's doing. There's a new book out by a pie maker in Detroit called Sister Pie. I'm excited about that. There are a ton of good books out this fall.
Oh, that's great. I love to hear what someone is someone else is thinking about and where the ideas come from. So I really enjoyed hearing that, and it was a thrill talking to you, Knight. And I hope you enjoyed yourself as much as we did. And I want everyone to go out to purchase Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook, the new book from Dory Greenspan. And please feel free to share any social medias or websites or anything like that before you go.
Thank you. It's been so great to be with you. I'm easy to find because I'm the same everywhere. I'm at Dory Greenspan or DoryGreenspan.com. Come visit me.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Have a great night. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
You too. Thanks so much. Bye.
That was fun.
That was good.
Wow.
Derek, what's your favorite cookbook? Mickey Mouse Prepares what?
My favorite cookbook is any cookbook that anyone uses to cook something for me.
Yes. That's true.
No, in all seriousness, Dory has wonderful cookbooks. She's on a whole nother level.
Definitely.
When it comes to cookbooks. And I sort of sway more to the Italian. Italian cookbooks and things like that. Barbecue catches my interest.
Yeah, my cookbook is Glenn Gross's I Cook Way Better Than You. And that's like a middle finger logo. That's a great cookbook. I love
it. Yeah, look, here's the logo. For this side, too.
Even though the internet's out there, cookbooks are great resources. Yep. There's nothing like having it right in front of you to be able to grab it and gather ideas and mix and match things.
Well, not only that, but do you really want to bring like a $1,400 laptop in your kitchen where there's, you know, liquid heat and all this other stuff? Book is, sure, it's great to have an iPad to read on, but for a cookbook to bring it into a kitchen
I don't think I've ever used a cookbook, I'll be honest with you.
Wow.
No, I'm serious. I kind of agree with Dory a little bit. I look at things and I want to do something and I look at the refrigerator door, I look at my spice shelf, I look at my what I have on the shelf or in the walk-in.
Right.
And I mix stuff together until I like it. And then I tweak it. And then once I get it to where I tweaked it the way I want it, I'll let customers and staff taste it. And then if it works the way I think it should work, then I'll put it on the menu. Specials first.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll be using the word lemon goop for a long time now. Love
I
that
think
word.
That was priceless. That lemon goop came from like a James Beard winner. If I said, "Hey, I got a book with lemon goop," I wouldn't get.
I'm
going to
be calling everybody
call.
Lemon goop tomorrow.
Well, let's put it this way: if I see "Oh darn" and a Dory grease band,
you're going to have your agent call.
But that was a fun show. Why don't you two gentlemen of Dining on a Dime give yourselves a plug of what you do here on Wildfire Radio?
Our show is on before this one, sort of like warming up the crowd a little bit. Dining on
crowd?
A Dime. Tens of listeners we have. What we do, basically, we just try to find the best food value, which we mentioned a little bit earlier, is almost always breakfast. But we're trying to steer away from the well-known places, and we try to kind of find those places that you don't hear about all the time.
Yeah, our show is for the underdog, hidden gem.
Cheap person. Hey, that too, man.
That's true. Well, we teach you how to eat.
Those on a budget were like a good deal, Glenn.
Exactly.
How about that?
Season two is going to be dining on a nickel.
And James over there.
Jim Pappas with Philadelphia Cheesesteak Adventure on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm just out trying to find the best cheesesteak in there.
That's it.
I'm Glenn.
That's like God's work.
Shut up. You stepped on me. Damn you.
He thought he just needed a new sandal since you're as many holes in it tonight.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm told. And they're very, very comfortable. But I'm Glenn Gross. I own Fat Jack's Barbecue. And hey, by the way, next Monday, I'm filming with Glenn Macnow for his TV show.
Wearing a mask?
Yes, I am. A Derek mask.
That's cool.
It's going to scare everybody. With he and Joe Sixpack. He's on Comcast, I believe.
Oh, awesome. Nice.
Well, that should be a good time.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with it.
Awesome. Well, we had the Dining on a Dime crew, the Philadelphia Cheesesteak Adventure.
Thank you, sir, for having
me. Thank you very much.
John Howard Fusco with his news. Also, note, we will not have a show next week. We'll be back the first week of November.
Who will we have the first week of November?
We'll find out in November, Glenn. Celebrity chef Ingrid Hoffman. She was so much fun Fantastic. To talk to. Ryan Grimm of Extra Crispy, Stephen Cook of Israeli Soul, and Dory Greenspan. And I'm Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com. This is Small Bites Radio, live Sunday, 6:35 p.m. on WildFireRadio.com. Tune in worldwide. Syndicated on AM stations. Google it to find it out on your own. And Apple products the following day on iTunes. And we end the show like we always do with a joke of the week from the legendary joke teller, Jackie the Joke Man Martlin.
Hi, I'm Jackie Martling, and this is Small Bites. A guy and his wife are eating at a Chinese buffet when the owner comes over and says, "Oh, mister, how you like a meal? You like a meal?" The guy says, "The duck was very rubbery." The owner says, "Oh, thank you, thank you. And your wife, she very rubbery too."